The one consistent messaging is educating. It's really being able to describe your product in a way that people go, oh, I get that. I could do that. Making it so accessible in the messaging that people don't look at it and go, well, that's a makeup artist doing it, or that's a product developer doing it. I'm never going to be able to do that. I can't recreate that. And I think that came from my education in dealing with real women.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Retail Refined, a market scale podcast with your host, me, Melissa Gonzalez. Today, I am so excited to share this half hour or so time with Laura Geller, and I know that you're going to enjoy the conversation as well. Not only is she an accomplished executive and entrepreneur, but also I think has one of the most magnetic personalities, and I am confident that that is going to come through in this conversation. She's going to talk to us all about where her, you know, career and genesis started, all the way to what she's seeing for the future. Her love affair with beauty began at an early age, a passion that led her to become a successful makeup artist and businesswoman, starting her career working under the Broadway lights. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and what it was like to be behind the scenes with celebrities and socialites, which is pretty much still part of her life, and also how she's catapulted from her first experience and appearance ever on QVC back in 1997 all the way to today. So Laura, thank you so much for being on with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I think you pretty much summed up my whole career just now.
I hit upon some things. We are going to dig a little into that 20-year studio that you had on the Upper East Side too, because I used to live not too far from that. But yes, I hit upon it, but that just scratched the surface. So I want the audience to hear a little bit from you. You know, tell us a little bit about, you know, how your career began backstage on Broadway and, you know, how that led you to today.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think if you stay around long enough in any business, you have a story to tell, right? So I always think about, like, how can I sum that story up? Because, boy, were there a lot of iterations of it. But basically, I started out as a makeup artist in New York City. And I was doing, because I studied theater and film makeup, I was doing film and theater and, you know, television makeup for people on Broadway in television and film. And I got to work with such luminaries as really Audrey Hepburn.
I mean,
I tell that story all the time.
Yeah, I would tell that story all the time if I was you.
And, you know, it's funny. When I was doing it, it was work. And I never looked at it like, wow, I'm doing Audrey Hepburn. But now, fast forward, I recognize the power of my career and what I've done. And what happened for me really, Melissa, was that I was doing all that talent and all these socialites and luminaries for all these major things. But it wasn't until I did A Woman Who Just Needed to Learn How to Put Her Makeup On and came to me. And when I taught her, I saw her just become, you know, lighter and smiling. And I realized I got so much more gratification out of doing real women. And so I started pivoting my career and working with real women. My reputation was really because of all the people I had done. But then it started getting busier with women that were just coming to me to learn how to put their makeup on, or going to their daughter's wedding or getting married. And everything that led to my career growing the way it did was out of demand from a client. It was never a plan. So fast forward to 1993, after working through the 80s and doing freelance only, in 1993, I opened my first store. And it was on 74th and Lex on the Upper East Side here in Manhattan. And it was a small space. And I thought, I never really wanted to have a store. I didn't want that responsibility. And I didn't want the responsibility of having employees and incorporating. And like I said, it wasn't a plan. It just, I didn't have a business plan that I was following. It was like, build it, they will come. Well, the store was too small. I had built such a reputation here in Manhattan that people were flooding to us. And a year after self-financing this and borrowing money to build it out, the store next door became available. And the woman whose husband was really the real estate exec for this particular area was walking by. She called me out of the store and she said, "You got to take this store too." I said, "I don't have the money to build out another store," but I figured out a way. And I borrowed again from Uncle Mo, from my friend Nancy, from my friend Sarah. You know, it was like $5,000 here, $10,000 there. I paid promissory notes, signed promissory notes, and I put the two stores together. And it was one of the most successful makeup stores of its kind here in Manhattan. There was nothing like it. I had private rooms where women could be done in private. So if they were high profile, they didn't have to worry about sitting out in the open. You paid for the service. So it wasn't like, come in and we'll sell you everything. But because I was an educator and I loved teaching the makeup and teaching women how to do it, inevitably, they would buy everything. And then I was like, well, geez, I have to start a makeup line because everything I had was private label and turnkey. And so I started building out slowly a makeup line, but it was still private label. But 1997 came and QVC discovered me. And I thought, I think that's right up my alley. And I went to Westchester, Pennsylvania for my first appearance. And I was so nervous. I literally did have an anxiety attack on my way there and thought, how am I going to do this? Like, they broadcast into hundreds of millions of homes. And I only ever dealt with one-on-one. But the minute I hit the set and there was no training for it, I was so comfortable. I was more comfortable on the set than I was off the set because I had worked in TV and film. So all the cameras and lights, it was like going home. And in 1997, in June, I sold out of the kit that they ordered. It was 750 units. And I sold out in like 7 minutes. I'm like, what?
Amazing.
I didn't sell 750, let alone one SKU. But a combination of SKUs in my store, I probably hadn't sold in 4 years. So who knew that I would be the longest standing color brand there today, 29 years this year.
Incredible.
And every June we celebrate an anniversary and it's been life changing for me, truly. They really put me on the map. They changed my career and the trajectory of my career.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a one-off, obviously, right? That to have that consistency for almost 3 decades, you know.
And it went like that. As we know, everything goes like that. But like the fact that we're planning our 30th anniversary and what we're going to do, I'm like, who has a job for 30 years, the same job, for the same exact thing for 30 years, you know? It's pretty impressive. I'm really, really proud of that.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's incredible and inspiring for so many people. And I love how you, you know, talked about your journey of finding that it was working with real women, you know, that you really resonated with you and helped you find your purpose, right? Of why you love this so much. But as you talked about it, I was thinking too, just like beauty today, you know, and in COVID, there was a move away from makeup and it was, you know, skincare. And now, you know, people are talking about makeup even more so again. But there's a lot of, I think, different messages that come out online. You know, some of it's like, you should have no makeup. What do you think traditional beauty brands are getting wrong about everyday consumers, right? When you think about what you're selling today successfully.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would tell you that I think that, I mean, not every brand, but most brands think that they have to keep changing and evolving their brand. And that they have to follow maybe a trend and they have to look sexy in their packaging. And I think that what we have found is when you stay true to your core and you build loyalty, my clients, my fans, my friends, they're all the same. They want consistency. And they don't follow trends and they don't want the newest, sexiest package. I mean, maybe they'll try because I think every woman, including myself, is always looking for that miracle in a jar.
Sure.
But I think that what we have done was our messaging has always been the same, with the exception of knowing who our customer is. Mm. And I think that's where brands get it wrong.
Yeah.
I think it's so important that you do a brand analysis and really do a deep dive into who is coming to your brand, whatever that may be. And what is that demographic and how old are they? And I always sort of knew, because we were steeped in the QVC customer, even though QVC didn't talk about it, that she was over 40, really traditionally over 50 and well beyond. And while I knew that inherently, I also was trying to appeal to everybody from 19 to 90 below and beyond. I didn't want to have a segment. But once our brand leaned in, and that was about 4 years ago, into really showing who the Geller Gallon guy was, meaning posting their pictures, meaning using models in our ads, using models on QVC that were older, the customer started recognizing that we were appealing to a sophisticated, mature client. Mm-hmm. And everything sort of exploded at that time. You can't be everything to everybody, and you have to know how to fill the white space. There's just too much repetition out there, and people aren't setting themselves apart and being different. And if they are, it's sort of like, I don't even understand what they're trying to say. What is their message?
Yeah.
It's busy and hard to digest.
Well, I think that's a trap that a lot of brands can fall into. It's, you know, the chasing of trends and trying to be the viral thing that happens. So how are you balancing that out? And what I think is interesting too is because you have so many different platforms. I mean, you have the one-to-one, 20 plus years, you've, you know, in your studio, what did you learn about that kind of engagement? And then on the opposite side of the spectrum, one to thousands, live streaming, you know, on QVC. So how did you keep A, that always learning mentality? And then B, how do you look at that when you think of platforms today, like a TikTok, and where that sits with beauty?
The one consistent messaging is educating.
Mm-hmm.
It's really being able to describe your product in a way that people go, oh, I get that. I could do that. Making it so accessible in the messaging that people don't look at it and go, well, that's a makeup artist doing it, or that's a product developer doing it. I'm never going to be able to do that. I can't recreate that. And I think that came from my education in dealing with real women. Not only am I her at home, I am that woman. I am that customer that buys from QVC. I am that person who sees ads and goes, you know, I'm watching it long enough. I think I need that. I think that I learned what women want. And I think being close to it for so many years and recognizing that nobody wants to labor over their makeup anymore. I mean, there was a time women would spend an hour on their makeup and do 5 million things, but those days are long gone. So your product has to be versatile. It has to be clear in your messaging, whether that's instructions that you're including, mm-hmm. or that even if they did it wrong, they still look better. I'm just speaking for a beauty brand perspective.
Sure, yeah.
And I think we accomplish that. We have people that go on TikTok. We have TikTok affiliates. We go on Amazon Live. And I think all the different people that represent the brand and go on have my messaging, and it trickles all the way through. And I think that's what sets us apart. And it's consistent. You know, the same messaging is being told on all of those platforms, mm-hmm. not different mm-hmm. for any of them.
Right. Well, I mean, you were also an early pioneer in making primer part of everyday routines, right? With your spackle line. And when you first introduced stuff like that, right, from an innovation standpoint, did consumers understand that immediately? Or was that kind of your earlier forays into how am I going to educate the market?
Yeah. And I think that's what I mean when I talk about, to answer this question, is like, because I worked on real women, not just mm-hmm. talent for television and film, but real women, and understood what their lifestyle was and what they needed for their makeup to do for them, I think I developed and innovated products that were problem solvers more than anything. Not yeah. just the next pretty eyeshadow or the next pretty lipstick or the next best formula of lipstick. Yeah, all that exists, but it's problem solution, our brand. Mm-hmm. And I think that when we can give something to somebody that solves a problem, yeah, I didn't know when I was pioneering primers that it all stemmed from me learning that when you put makeup on, your makeup will disappear quickly and break down if you put a lot of oils and creams under it because your skin is absorbing it. So I had an aha moment in the late 90s and I said, wow, what if I could create something? You know, today I only wish that I had like trademarked or patented that whole category. My God, I was one of the first to market. I wasn't the only. But I was one of the first to market with the idea that if you put something on the skin that smoothed the skin and gave the skin a smoother appearance and a nice sort of canvas so that whatever you put on top, not only did you need less of and it would go on smoother, but that your makeup would hold up because it was like a magnet. So yeah, innovation is really important. And I got that from working with real women. So if you're just a product developer creating a line or a celebrity or, you know, anybody that thinks they can create a line, if you're not working with your audience on some level and hearing what they need and talking to them and constantly having that interaction, I don't think your line is going to resonate. It would mm-hmm. be hard to make it happen unless you are a celebrity, perhaps, and they're buying because of your celebrity. But how long will that last? You know, I don't know.
Right. Yeah, that doesn't always have the same longevity. I think a couple things. One, you know, there's so many brands now that talk about being so forward thinking because they have these focus groups. And that was another way in which you were a pioneer in that you've always had that mentality, right? Sitting there with the women and also you're selling more than product. You're selling empowerment.
Yeah.
To all these women, which for your customer, I mean, any customer, but like specifically yours, that's a very meaningful value proposition.
Yeah, it really is. I think, you know, it's funny. I always say it's never too late. There are so many women that have never worn makeup or live in places where they don't have access. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's funny. I'm so mindful of every woman's lifestyle. Whether she is a celebrity or a socialite or a stay-at-home mom or a retired mom or an empty nester. And when I'm creating product, I sit with my product development team and I'll say, how is this going to work with somebody that doesn't have access to getting it, to understanding what it is? And I'm a tyrant when it comes to these things. And, you know, for an example, even myself early on, I named a product, but I just wrote the name of the product, but not what it did. Mm. So now our labeling is very clear. And, you know, sometimes I'll see products out there and they're written in a fancy other language. And I'm like, I don't know what is this? I don't even know what this means. So when I do my product development, I know that whoever's receiving it, she has to be able to, one, from opening the compact easy, now we're working mm-hmm. on making the labels bigger and more legible so that you don't need to take your phone and put the magnifier on the bottom of the label.
Yes.
Why are you laughing, Melissa?
Maybe. I mean, I have to do this. I'm like, I'm in the restaurant with the menu and I'm like, where's my reading glasses and my flashlight? And I can't see anything anymore.
Oh, no, we are. I said, because my team is much younger than me and I keep saying to them, we have to color code things. We have to make things more legible. Now we just launched an item and inside the compact is a 10-time magnification mirror and a regular one. So that if you don't need the 10-time, you've got the regular. But I mean, we are doing these things to solve a problem and give you a solution. And I think it's because I'm talking to her all the time, but I also think it's because I'm growing up with the brand.
Yeah.
And I have seen what I need. And, you know, so I can speak from the decades of being 18 through my now almost late 60s. And I think that's what gives me an edge to keeping this brand fresh and innovative.
Yeah, well, you have that always listening mentality and always learning. And I think sometimes brands think that growth has to become because they're going to start expanding into all these other spaces versus having deep expertise and something that you can own. And that's what allows you to come up with meaningful innovation.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny. I know you didn't ask this question, but we were in all the Sephora's, all the Ulta's for many years at different times. And my biggest concern being in big box stores was, will my messaging come through? How will they understand, you know, other than training the sales associates in the stores, it's just sitting on a gondola, on a fixture unit. Mm. What if you don't know Laura Geller and you didn't hear me on QVC? This is before social media. How would you understand this item that looked so uniquely different than a lot of other items? And it was always my fear, and my fear was realized. And it was really hard to do business in that capacity. And although we were able to sustain ourselves, ultimately, it wasn't worth it financially for the brand. And now we're just D2C, because we do so well at explaining our messaging through online education, through videos that I do, through the TikToks and the Amazons. And that's how we're doing most of our selling.
Well, that was one of the follow-up questions. I'm glad you kind of segued to it because Amazon, right? That's a big distribution channel. How do you maintain that messaging on a platform like that?
Well, I mean, we keep evolving there too, but I mean, it is the messaging. It's all the, I can't tell you how many videos I tape for every product that I create. I mean, right here in my home in New York City, literally in my kitchen. In fact, there was one comment, why do you always do it in your kitchen? I was like, I'm sorry, I have an island and I'm able to put the products out and the cameraman's able to put the camera Yeah, so maybe that's a little boring because we always do it in the same spot, but we are always going to give you, and we're working on something else now too, we're always going to give you the education behind the product. And you're going to hear it from the person who developed it, literally the person who developed it, which is so important to me. You know, listen, people say to me, you know, what are you doing? Why are you working so hard? Can't you stop working? I'm like, no. I love my clients too much.
Yeah.
I like my friends. And I just want to make sure that she is supported in every time she picks up something of ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I also think you're in an interesting time because it's only been in the past, I don't know, 5 years or so that women that are Gen X and older are being more vocal. You know, they're claiming their self-confidence again. I think all the demystification that's coming out with perimenopause and menopause and kind of like finding this second stage of life, you know, that's a core demographic for you. So can you talk a little bit about that and, you know, how you see that aligns with the brand?
Yeah, no, you're right about the vocal. We're in constant touch. I mean, I am reading every review when I can, comments. I am now speaking to, I remember when I had my store, because we closed in 2012, the store, but I remember I was young and I was working on women and as I'm doing their makeup, they would start perspiring and I didn't know what was happening. And I'd be like, oh my God, I just finished doing her foundation and her blush and she's perspiring. So then I got these mini fans in every room. You know, now because I've walked through it and I see it, I can address that problem and solve that and come up with a product that's a solution that, you know, no matter whether you perspire, whether you are going through having a summer moment, the product that, you know, is right for you will last and won't break down. And hearing people say, I wish it would do this, or can you do that? Can you get that done? I mean, I think it was just yesterday I was walking around Soho. And I was talking to two women outside a little cafe. They didn't know who I was. And I then said to them, do you wear makeup. That's, do you ever hear of Laura Geller? And they were like, oh, yeah, we, that's a great brand. I said, I'm Laura Geller. And they were so cute. They were so excited. And she said, do you have an SPF powder? And I said, no, actually, I don't. And I thought about it. We did in the past, but we don't have anything now. And I immediately clocked that and said, I got to go back and we got to come up with, yeah, maybe there's a million brands that have it, but we should have it too. And so one person out of, I don't know how many millions of clients we have, that said something that it resonated. I'm always looking for great product development ideas. But I think, you know, it's solving a problem as we enter each decade, the needs of our skin changes. And so ingredients change, ingredients go away that people don't want to see anymore. And it's constant evolvement of the brand.
Yeah. Well, you've had decades of experience and success. You've been named 50, right? You were on Forbes list of 50 over 50. There's people on this, you know, that are going to be listening to this that, you know, will learn from you. So looking back, you know, what are one or two lessons that you've learned that you think those who are, you know, embarking earlier maybe on their career or maybe a different sector, what can they learn from you?
Well, I think I may have said a couple of the things, but I'm going to really dive in and tell you that back when I started, there wasn't enough out there available to me, or at least I didn't know how to find it, of mentorship.
Yeah.
And knowing who to go to, who may have walked the path that I could talk to and say, you know, can you give me any advice? I love that I'm in a position to share, you know, the things that went wrong and how you can avoid those pitfalls. But the beauty of the pitfalls are that you have a better appreciation when you get through them. And it's part of the web of the story you tell, you know, you tell, that you weave, I should say. Okay, so a couple of things is, know if you're passionate about your product or an idea about your product. When I say do your homework, I really mean do your homework. I can't tell you how many people in the beauty space never really watched QVC and the beauty in QVC. That's a powerful platform because founders get to go there and tell the story of how they created their item. And I don't mean just beauty. It could be anything. Obviously, they sell everything on QVC. So I've talked to people and said, have you ever checked out, you know, QVC and really recorded the shows and watched the other beauty brands that go on and see if how yours is, how you differentiate yours. So when I say do your homework, it's across all platforms, not just QVC, obviously, but retail, DTC. You know, if you really believe that your product is unique and different, then you have something to go on. And then having that 30 to 60 second elevator pitch. Because someone's going to say, tell me about your product. That speaking panel that I spoke on a panel in Miami last week, and you were familiar with it. And there was a gal that had just launched a skincare line. And I said, what's different about your skincare line? And she said, and she couldn't necessarily tell me what the ingredient was that made, because skincare is harder than makeup, let's face it. It takes time to see a differentiation in your skin. What she said to me was in those 30 seconds was, if your skin isn't different within 2 weeks, I will give you your money back. She gifted me the products. But that was her promise. That was her promise. That resonated with me. It was like, wow, really? Okay, now I'm going to try.
Now you're going to try it. Yeah.
Well, she made that promise to me. So I think it's a combination of those things and then knowing who you're speaking to, because you cannot be everything to everybody. Knowing who to target with your product and who's going to want that product and who needs that product. I call it the three W's. When you present your product, what is it? So people understand, that's the first thing. Who is it for? So when they're watching you, whether you're doing something on social media or on QVC or just talking to them face-to-face, who is it for? And then what will it do for you? Those three things are critical in thinking about what you're developing. That's all, about product development and moving forward with the product. But then there was that whole host of other things I knew nothing about. I didn't know how to run a business. I didn't know about P&Ls and balance sheets. And P.S., I still don't. It's not.
That's why you have a team.
Yeah. I don't want. It's not an area I chose to learn. I had setbacks because I didn't know it. But today, there is so much more available out there that you don't have to know it all, but you do have to be able to trust the product or whomever it is that's selling you that product. And you have to make sure that they have a good reputation, because I didn't know how to vet them. And some things happened in my career along the way that probably wouldn't happen today because of the resources that are out there.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It's always a learning journey.
Yeah.
Well, you've shared so much of how you got here today. Before we go, look at the future. What's one or two things that you're most excited about? I mean, in June, you have your anniversary, but in the year ahead, like, what are you excited about for the brand?
I think I'm really excited about what I told you, which was that we're going to start to be that brand that people go, oh my God, thank you. Where have you been? With a magnifying mirror in a compact, with color coding every single pencil where we can, so that when it's in a C in your drawer on your vanity, you can go, there's that purple, there's that pink, there's that red, and making the labels bigger. Innovation's hard when you've been around as long as I have, because you see things come out today and you go, I did that 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But it's finding innovation, not just for the heck of finding it, but finding innovation that is problem solving and streamlining women's routines so that they can look good quick without a lot of extra tools. So we have a lot of things up our sleeve that we're working on.
I love that, because in my head I have 30 minutes, but usually I have 5, 10 if I'm lucky to get my act together.
Absolutely.
So yes, I appreciate that. Okay, a few fast rapid fire from Laura Geller. Okay, are you ready?
I'm sitting down.
All right. First one, what is the one makeup product that you would never leave the house without?
Foundation.
Foundation.
Yeah.
Okay. Your biggest beauty pet peeve?
Is not blending, seeing makeup that's not blended. Even on myself, sometimes when I'm in a hurry and I don't take an extra second. So unblended makeup.
Yes. I need to be better at that too. Okay. And then the last question is, what is the best makeup trick that you learned when you were backstage on Broadway?
Well, this is going to go against what everybody has been taught.
Okay.
If you want your makeup to last, and you want it to last under hot climates, swimming, you shouldn't put any moisture under your makeup at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, I'm talking about where you need a day to look good from morning till night, do it on a matte skin.
Okay.
Our primer,
always trying to moisturize. So there we go.
Yeah. Our primers help. But even I think that, if you can dare to go without anything under your makeup that's emollient, your makeup will last longer.
Okay. See? New tip for me. Thank you.
There you go. Happy to share.
Yes. Well, Laura, thank you so much for spending the time. The half hour always goes so quickly, but appreciate everything that you shared. Again, everybody, Laura Geller, founder and beauty visionary. So if you're not shopping the products yet, you need to check them out, and appreciate the time that you spent with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Melissa. This was so fun for me to do. Thank you.
Yeah.